Coming up on New York Now, Governor Cuomo fires back at criticism from President Trump.
Why did you start it? It was your policy. It is your budget.
Lawmakers highlight a bill to help fight the return of the measles downstate.
It's just crazy. It's insane.
We have to put science ahead of science fiction.
Nobody else's life should be endangered because you believe in what is nonsense.
And we'll take you to the emotional hearing in Albany on limo safety, prompted by last fall's tragic crash in Schoharie County.
Every time I go to the cemetery to see my daughter, I promise her, I'm in this until I either get what I want or they put me in the ground next to you.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. A heartbreaking hearing investigates state oversight of the stretch limousine industry.
More on that in a little bit. Our headlines start off with a fresh battle between the governor and Donald Trump.
Early Monday morning, the president criticized Andrew Cuomo and Attorney General Tish James for, as he said, illegally using the state's legal apparatus to take down and destroy the National Rifle Association. A few days earlier, the AG's office confirmed it had opened an investigation into the NRA's tax-exempt status. The governor responded on the same day after an event on Long Island, taking advantage of the tweet to criticize the organization.
The NRA, in my opinion, does a disservice to legal gun owners. The NRA's goal is to sell more guns. And they don't care if they sell them to legal owners or illegal owners. They want to sell more guns. They've not served legal gun owners well, and they haven't served Americans well. Everyone agrees a legal owner has a right to firearms. The issue is mentally ill people shouldn't have access to firearms, former felons shouldn't have access to firearms, right? Criminals shouldn't have access to firearms. So to do that, you need a background check to make sure you're selling a gun to a legal owner, not an illegal owner. And the NRA has always fought that because I believe they're more beholden to the manufacturers of guns, and they've been all about selling more and more guns.
One tweet later, Trump moved on to the controversial capping of the state and local tax deduction in the new federal tax bill, saying New York political leaders didn't even put up a fight, which left the governor, who has criticized the law on numerous occasions, dumbfounded.
What he said about SALT is unbelievable. I've been saying for months that it was an assault on New York, pardon the pun, and now the president is running from his own policy. New York could have stopped it. Why did you start it? It was your policy. It is your budget. You took credit for it. Why are you now, number one, abandoning your own policy, which is, you know, only in the world of Donald Trump? And second, if you knew it was bad for New York, why did you do it? Why did you do it?
Earlier in the day, Cuomo was joined by Long Island legislators and one of its most famous residents, singer Billy Joel, to sign legislation banning offshore drilling in the state's waters, a rebuke to the Trump administration's proposal to open up more coastal areas for oil and gas exploration.
It's one of the steps we are taking, because this is going to require a bold and an aggressive agenda on behalf of the state of New York. New York has to lead the way as an alternative to what this federal government is doing. Let them continue denying. We're going to admit the truth,
admit the reality, and we're going to show that you can actually address it, but that we have to address it.
It's just crazy. It's insane.
We have to put science ahead of science fiction.
Nobody else's life should be endangered because you believe in what is nonsense.
Back at the state capitol in Albany, legislators highlighted a new bill that would end all non-medical exemptions for required vaccines for children attending schools in New York. It's a response to the measles outbreak in the state, particularly in Rockland County, which has just over 200 of the 700 nationwide cases. County Executive Ed Day, a Republican, joined Democratic lawmakers in support of the bill.
What I would say is this. I made a comment about head in the sand. The time has come for action. The bottom line is that this issue here needs to be addressed. And to talk about personal reaction, talk to a mom who's afraid to go out with her infant. Talk to a lady who's pregnant. Talk to a gentleman who survived cancer, who doesn't know what to do. Talk to people who are in fear right now, and maybe a founded fear, that their lives will be compromised, all because there is an inability or a lack of commitment to doing what has to be done and call this for what it is. These are personal belief exemptions, and there comes a time, as was said before, free speech is not all-inclusive to do what you wish to do. You have a responsibility to the greater good. You have a responsibility because the fact of the matter is the needs of the many outweigh the desire and the want of the one or the few.
Lawmakers hope to pass the bill before the close of the legislative session in late June. In other news, Senate Democrats passed legislation they've been pushing for years, establishing strict guidelines on toxic chemicals in children's products.
To know that as a father of a 10-month-old, that this toy containing 967 parts per million of cadmium is able to be sold and is currently being sold in stores just miles from here lets us know that there is much work to do, even to just inform parents of what is being put in their children's product, let alone those that should be banned.
Among other pieces of legislation is a bill that would amend the state's Constitution's Bill of Rights to include a right to clean air, clean water, and a healthful environment. The fourth floor Senate gallery is the new place to hold press conferences, as you can see. About 15 minutes after the Democrats were finished, Senate Republicans unveiled a series of bills in what they are calling the Justice Agenda. It was spurred in part by the state parole board's decision to release Judith Clark, who participated in a 1981 armed truck robbery that left two police officers dead. Leader John Flanagan used the opportunity to criticize criminal justice reforms passed by Democrats this year.
We think the pendulum has swung way too far to the left, and during the budget, I said this, my colleagues said it, we're going to say it again. What the Democrats are bringing forth to the public is the criminal's Bill of Rights. Whether it's bail reform or changing sentencing, it's the criminal's Bill of Rights. There's no focus on the victim. There's no focus on law enforcement. There's no focus on the district attorneys and the tools they need to protect our citizens. Again, ladies and gentlemen, it's the criminal's Bill of Rights.
Republicans also blasted a bill introduced by Manhattan Senator Brad Hoyleman that would make inmates eligible for parole once they reach the age of 55 after serving 15 consecutive years. And finally, a new report by the nonprofit organization Protect the Adirondacks looks at economic and population trends in the park since 1970. They found the results for communities inside the Blue Line are consistent with, and in some cases even exceed, other rural areas.
Political leaders, a lot of folks holding up data of the New York statewide average is X and the Adirondack average is Y. And let's look at the gap, or that the unemployment rate in Hamilton County is the highest in the state, so the Adirondacks must be having a hard time. Those are not really reflective of what's going on in the park. And so we thought that taking a long-term look and making a fair comparison with other rural areas, we hope will help to leaven the debate and to move the debate forward in a way that, you know, can lead to, you know, viable strategies to help continue to build Adirondack communities.
You can read their lengthy report by heading to protecttheadirondacks.org.
Thursday marked the long-anticipated hearing in Albany on limo and bus safety. This comes almost 7 months after the country's deadliest transportation-related disaster in a decade. 20 people died when a stretch limousine crashed in rural Schoharie County, about 30 miles west of Albany, including all 17 passengers, the driver, and two bystanders.
Your testimonies today will be documented in the public record and streamed live by the New York State Senate. We'll use this information to change laws to make the industry safer and the regulations stronger. And we're going to take the steps necessary to ensure real reform.
Transportation Chair Tim Kennedy of Buffalo was joined by just two of the 62 other state senators for the hearing, Jim Tedisco and Jim Gorin, who both represent districts in and around the areas that suffered two horrific limousine crashes in the last 4 years. Several relatives of those lost in last year's upstate crash testified, as well as loved ones representing the eight women involved in a 2015 incident on Long Island, when a pickup truck T-boned a limousine making a U-turn that ended up killing four and injuring the four others. The father of one of the victims on Long Island criticized the delay in holding such a hearing.
To the families in Schoharie, our deepest heartfelt sympathies. We know exactly what you're going through, and I wish this could have been done 2 years ago so this never would have happened to them.
Many shared their heart-wrenching stories.
As I struggle with the multitude of emotions associated with Amy's death, knowing I will never share the moments a parent longs for as their child goes through life, marriage, motherhood, working towards her professional goals of CPA, lawyer, and ultimately the first female commissioner of baseball. As these aspirations were snuffed out in an instant by a senseless crash that could have been mitigated and maybe even avoided with proper regulations and oversight.
I will never have the joy. She was my only daughter. Thank God I have a son. He's the reason I'm here, because I have to live for him, or I would have went home that night and taken any pill I could find to kill myself, because I didn't know if I could bear this grief. I do it. I do it with a strong heart. I do it to support my son, and I do it to support my husband. But if I had everything in me, I wouldn't want to be here. I would want to be where she is.
Multiple family members during their testimony suggested changes they wanted to see take place.
We urge the installation of seatbelts and airbags in all stretched vehicles. And in conjunction with these, we believe that these cars should be equipped with escape hatches and window releases for tilt-in purposes. These allow for quicker escape routes from a mangled or otherwise damaged vehicle. We urge that inspections of said vehicles are performed at a facility deemed and overseen by the state as authorized stations for remanufactured stretched vehicles. These facilities will specialize in the examination of anti-intrusion and retaining bars while scrutinizing the integrity of such an engineered vehicle.
No real training is required to drive a limo with a passenger in it. Our families and friends, our children rent these numerous times throughout their lives, yet no one is required to learn any type of safety checks or accident prevention guidelines. This law should have been established in July of 2015 when four young women lost their lives in Long Island. Also, we request all drivers taking the training must be drug tested and a complete background check must be done.
The families didn't ask for a limousine ban, but pressed for more accountability and more oversight, and vowed to keep advocating.
All businesses have to adapt to changing times. Will you and you and you, our state representatives, allow profits to be put ahead of human lives? You collectively have the opportunity today to ensure that those known to you as those you will never know have a chance to enjoy all of their tomorrows.
We are never going to end this until we get the results that we're looking for. Every time I go to the cemetery to see my daughter, I promise her I'm in this until I either get what I want or they put me in the ground next to you.
Included in the recently passed state budget were changes to state law that give the State Department of Transportation and state police the ability to remove license plates from stretched limos that fail inspection or fail to get a state certificate. There is also tougher oversight that penalizes operators who circumvent state oversight and a ban on limos making U-turns. All right, we're going to send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, for this week's edition of the Reporters Roundtable.
All right, now for more on this story and others, we're at the Reporters Roundtable with David Lombardo from my own paper, the Times Union, and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. So the limo crash hearing on Thursday, as we just saw, heartbreaking in the testimony that you got from relatives of the victims of these two crashes, the one on Long Island in 2015, and of course the terrible crash in Schoharie that killed 20 people. There was only one member of the Transportation Committee, the chair, Tim Kennedy, who attended. The other two lawmakers who were there, not for the whole time, Jim Tedisco, who represents part of the region that was affected by the more recent crash, and Jim Gorin from Long Island, where the 2015 accident occurred.
It's hard to figure that out. Do they see it as just a local issue to Schoharie, which is kind of an upstate rural area? I should know, I live near there. There's not very many people. Do they think, well, it's just a local issue? It just seems like more lawmakers should have been there, because really, it could have happened anywhere. It looks like, you know, the Department of Transportation dropped the ball on the inspections with this limo, and it wasn't just a local issue. So that is kind of puzzling that they weren't there. And yeah, it looks bad. It looks like they don't care about that.
Yeah, the optics, obviously, that Karen says, aren't great. From a practical sense, I don't know how this will actually affect, you know, whatever legislation might come out of this. I mean, you know, you see staff sitting in the hearing, you know, they're taking lots of notes with when the industry speaks and trying to plan what's going forward. I think we'll probably see some sort of regulations done before June, maybe some more insurance requirements. That's one of the things that's been pushed by Senator Neil Breslin, an Albany Democrat who wasn't at the hearing as well, but had his name on a press release that went out about the hearing. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There will, we should note, there's going to be another hearing, I believe, down on Long Island.
Yeah, definitely one on Long Island.
Weeks, right.
Where there was another crash three or four years ago, and there was some, you know, a report that came out, and that apparently it wasn't really heated. They didn't do the regulatory changes that might have prevented this crash. I mean, I know, like, you know, 2020 hindsight is perfect, but yeah, it just seems like maybe there's a better way if a car fails inspection twice, if a limo does, that maybe if they'd taken the plates away, people might have had a clue when they got into the car, hey, this doesn't have plates, we shouldn't get in this car.
Ron Epstein, the acting director of, acting commissioner of DOT, appeared very briefly. I think it was only less than 25 minutes that he was at the table. Kennedy, once again, was the only person asking questions there, and he got sort of a kid gloves treatment. Of course, the acting commissioner said, I can't answer a lot of questions because I don't want to imperil the investigation into the Schoharie crash that is ongoing. Nauman Hussein, who's the operator of the limousine company, has been charged with criminally negligent homicide and manslaughter, so that's understandable, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's part of it. But yeah, it did seem strange that it didn't get the attention that it seemed like it deserved.
There was legislative news this week from Carl Hastie, who said that the Assembly is ready to take up the question of whether or not undocumented immigrants should be supplied with driver's licenses if they have the necessary paperwork to apply for them. That is going to be very controversial, much more controversial in the Senate, where there are upstate marginal Democrats who are not looking forward to taking a vote on this.
But Hastie also said they need to educate the public first, because polls show that most people are against it. Even among Democrats, only 55% support it. So I'm not really sure what kind of education they can do in the 6 weeks that are left in the session, but he seemed to say they're not going to do this immediately, which makes me wonder if maybe they are going to do it at all, even the support is there.
I think he's feeling a lot of pressure to get this done from his far left, despite the speaker saying that this isn't motivated by a threat of potential primaries. I'm hearing from within the conference there that he is getting a lot of heat, despite what he's saying, and there's a motivation to move this, despite as well getting a lot of pressure from his upstate members who feel like, you just threw us over, you know, overboard on this because we can't handle this. There's the informal upstate caucus that's not happy about this. And you talk about the Senate. You know, the bill has less than 32 co-sponsors on it in the Senate. They need 32 co-sponsors. You've got more than, you know, 9 members representing suburbia in the Democratic Conference who are not going to want to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, instead they're just going to have Speaker Heastie making his members take a vote that, you know, might not go anywhere. And the governor, you know, hasn't really said he's signed on to that. He's going to want a three-way agreement.
Yeah, he said he'd sign it if they come to an agreement. Yeah. But yeah, the Senate's worried about their Long Island Democrats and they have to protect them. But the other thinking is maybe they should do it now because elections aren't for a year and a half and maybe the whole issue will blow over if nothing, you know, bad happens from giving the undocumented immigrants the driver's licenses because haven't been bad things happening in other states where they have passed this.
Oh, but I just think about the option. I mean, SAFE Act passed January 2013, 2014 elections, it had real serious ramifications. So, I mean,
but the news cycle's even faster now than it was 5 years ago. So.
Memories are long.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So are you going to get a challenge from the left? They're worried about primaries.
Yep.
Or are the Republicans going to gain power over this? So it's a hard calculation to make.
News this week on Thursday also occurring. Thursday was a big news day. Howard Zemsky, the director and CEO, I believe is his title, of Empire State Development, is going to be stepping back from kind of day-to-day management, but he's still going to be involved in the big picture.
This comes after the Amazon debacle where they lost the whole Amazon deal. I mean, got to wonder that we know Governor Cuomo's been really angry about that. Maybe he's been hard to live with because he and Howard Zemsky have been very close, and Zemsky's done the job for a long time, just being paid only $1 a year. So you have to think, well, you know, maybe he's just tired of it because he was going to leave after elections anyway. So it's hard to know if it's because of the Amazon deal or all the other stuff that he's had to deal with. He had to essentially clean up after that big corruption scandal that sent many people to jail having to do with economic development, and Zemsky had to try to, you know, set things straight after that.
We want to spend some time talking about a project that Dave has been embarked on, and that is a multi-chapter podcast history of the 2009 Senate coup. We are approaching the 10-year anniversary, and people get nostalgic, even for something like the coup. The first two episodes are out. Mm-hmm. People can download them at timesunion.com. I think Dave has done a terrific job, and I'm not just talking up a Times Union project.
Yeah, I do too. You just really did an amazing job on it. It's really pretty riveting story, especially in the first ones where you're setting up all the things that happened before the coup. That, I mean, I covered it, but that I've forgotten about a lot of those details of how this all happened.
Well, you're trying to wipe it away from your memory.
Well, I think so, or just so much has happened since then. But.
Well, and you know, the reaction that I've been getting around the Capitol of people who live this is, you know, yikes, I didn't know if I wanted to revisit this. And, you know, for people who might not be familiar, my Albany insiders, what we're talking about is in 2009 when Senate Democrats had two of their members flip to the Republican conference. The conference was very narrowly divided at that point. It gave Republicans control, led to a month-long stalemate. It was, you know, theatrics in Albany that we've never seen before. And as part of this big event, you know, we're also hosting a live forum at the Hearst Media Center in Colony, where we're going to have some of the people who were there behind the scenes making this happen, talking about what they remember.
And some Karen, some of the people observing it from the outside and being very surprised. That was a well-kept secret before they staged the coup in June of 2009.
The remarkable thing is that you go deep into the roots of it. Yeah. I mean, the podcast essentially begins about 6 months or 7 or 8 months before the coup actually happens. And
the pre-coup of 2008.
Right, yes. And the post-coup, of course, is fascinating because in many ways, I think you would probably say, we're living in a legislative world that in many ways was shaped by those events from 10 years ago.
I mean, we still get press releases from Republican leader John Flanagan talking about what happened in 2009, 2010 as a campaign rallying cry. Senate Democrats say they've moved well past this. It's, you know, buried in the past, but it's not something Republicans are going to give up.
They also have more members now, so
it's
less chance of it happening. But
we
who knows? Maybe this will give people ideas hearing
hopefully.
This.
We should close by noting that live discussion happens on Tuesday at the Hearst Media Center. People can still sign up to attend. It ought to be a good time. Both of you are going to be there, and I will be there with a big bucket of popcorn listening
in. Good.
All right. Thanks very much to Dave Lombardo from the Times Union and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. This week's New York Now poll question asks, do you agree with the legislation that would end all non-medical vaccine exemptions? Let us know at nynow.org. Let's take a look at our previous poll. Was the Mueller report mostly good or bad news for President Trump? Over half said it was mostly bad. Gus in the Southern Tier, though, watching on WSKG, said it was nothing but a witch hunt by the Democrats, and they lost big time. They are now acting like a bunch of sore losers. Mary on Long Island, watching on WLIW, told us, imagine how much time he's spending protecting himself from impeachment and prosecution. Who's running the government if the White House is so consumed with all these legal issues? And finally, Marcia in Kinderhook was short and to the point. The total report should be released to Congress. Impeachment should follow. Our thanks to everyone who took the time to write in. We always enjoy hearing from you. The website is nynow.org. If you were on vacation like I was last week, you may have missed our previous show. No worries, all of our programs can be found here, including links to us on social media. In addition, you'll find a path to the Capitol Confidential blog, also available at timesunion.com.
All right, that's all the time we have this week. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.